This is life. Listening and inspiring friends in entertainment.
They see that it's a farce at this point, but you're still gonna lie and tell the truth at the same time.
Focusing life's principles with your goals.
The tone that he's gonna bring hopefully will reestablish some decorum, some respect, and some orderliness.
And taking empowerment global with empowerment speaker Stone Stafford and Johnny Vaughn.
What's up, what's up, what's up, friends, family, and fans? It's your man, your boy, your homie, your ace, number one in your life and number one in your heart after God. So I guess that makes me number two, Stone Stafford. And I'm riding with my ride
no,
or die.
You're going to stop is what you're going to do. You're going to stop because the level of disrespect you just showed me by telling everybody that you're number one while I'm sitting here, I don't take kindly to that. I don't like it at all. I am your number one, your ace. I'm Johnny Vaughn. What's going on, bro? How are you?
Oh, man. I'm not even going down that rabbit trail with you. It wasn't now you just made Tasha mad. Now you just made my mom mad. Now you just... So we good. I'm great. How are you? I'm surviving.
Things are good, man. I'm going to be honest. I'm absolutely frustrated. I'm a little angry. I'm thoroughly and utterly confused, mainly by the political climate. As I mentioned off, I've been watching OAN, Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC literally for about the last 72 hours nonstop, just keeping track of what's going on. And I'm disappointed in a lot of things, proud of some of the reactions and some things, but it leaves me thoroughly confused and disjointed in where we are as a nation right now. That's how I'm feeling personally.
No, I get it. And I'm the same way. So we are definitely going to get into this one.
Yeah.
Because it's been one hell of a week. Mm-hmm. All right. So we actually had to bring someone on who knows what he's talking about. Because Johnny and I, we kind of fake it till we make it. So every once in a while, we'll bring somebody in who really knows what they're talking about or who can add to our conversation. But before we do that, before I wet your palate and all that kind of stuff, y'all already know what you got to do, man. Just go on and hit that like and that subscribe button. And remember, share. You're going to hit the share. Mm-hmm. Whoever's name comes up, go on and send it to them. All right? They're going to thank you for it later. Trust me, some way, somehow. A check might show up in your mailbox. You never know. That's what happens when you follow Life on Podcast.
Don't start making empty promises and lies like politics. That's not what we want to do.
I'm sorry. Was there a promise? No. Was there a lie? If there's a possibility, then it's not a lie. Mm. That's a great segue because we're going to talk to someone who has to make his way through a world and career of broken promises and lies. Mm-hmm. That is politics. We want to welcome our man, Mr. Maceo Mahoney. Uh-huh. And sorry, right off the bat. Now, I don't judge a book by its cover. So I'm going to ask you, are you Irish?
No, but I'm not Irish, but you know, you've done your homework because my name is Irish.
That's what I'm saying. So you never know. You could be a black Irishman. I'm sure there's one or two out there.
So my mom named me after James Brown, saxophone player. They was real, real. They loved James Brown. So they named me after James Brown, saxophone player, which is Maceo Parker. So that's how I got it.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, cool. Well, welcome, Mr. Mahoney. Just for you guys who don't know, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself, but he is a former city councilman of Washington, Georgia. But he's in bigger and deeper stuff than that. So, Maceo, can you please go on and break down to our listeners who we have the pleasure of joining us today?
Yes, good evening, guys. Glad you guys reached out to me. It's a pleasure to be on you guys' podcast. I am Maceo Mahoney, City Council, Washington, Georgia. And I'm also the chairman of Georgia Municipal Black Caucus of Georgia, which is over all the African-American mayors and city councilmen across the state of Georgia. So good evening to you guys, and glad to be on here.
He just did one of those.
Yeah. Yeah,
he just made
my little college flex look a little weak right there.
You know what I'm saying? What do you do, Stone? I mean, I don't want a recording studio. What do you do, Maceo? Well, I'm the chairman of the National Black Caucus of the state of Georgia. That's what's up. So, look, man, we just had to bring somebody else on who can offer an additional or even different perspective on just what's going on in this country. Whew, I don't even know where to go from there. So obviously with everything going on with this transition from one president to the next, and then with the brouhaha, circus, clown show, whatever you want to call it, that went down in the nation's capital. First thing I want to ask you right off the bat, and I don't really have any set questions, I just want this to be an open conversation. But right off the bat, what are your first gut instincts, like your first gut reaction to what's been going on in the past couple of days?
Well, first, I think we just need to send condolences out to Brian Sitwick family, who was the Capitol officer that lost his life in the incident that unfolded on January the 6th. Well, the murder that happened, you know, right. We can't say he lost his life because he was there doing his job before these people actually came to actually overthrow the government.
Right.
So, yeah. But you was asking what, how did I feel about what I saw?
Yeah, just your initial reaction of what's going on right now. Because I know a lot of people have initial reactions, and then once you sit down and start thinking about some things, then you start making sense. So I just want to know, how did you initially react and what's going on in your mind and in your heart right now?
Honestly, when I first started watching, it was like, okay, Trump is pump faking some more people, you know, kind of getting them riled up. But I never thought it was going to go to the extent that it actually took. You know, one part of the segment, you see them just walking around marching, which was a little bit of civil unrest the night before. But you start to see them go down towards the Capitol after the speech that he made around 11 o'clock. And then you start seeing them going up the steps and scaling the side of the Capitol. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute now. This should not be happening. What's going on? And, you know, you had the, you know, the joint government was there to do a ceremonial, which was to, you know, record the electoral votes, recognize Joe Biden as the new president, and start the peaceful transition. So I was, you know, it was one of those moments that, you know, how your family always told you about things that happened years ago.
Right.
And then now you see this, you're like, you know, what is happening right now? You
right.
know, so, I was there all just like all of America was.
Right.
Yeah. Now,
how about you,
we do know this. I think I've already expressed how I feel, Stone. we've gotten some movement already. Stephen Sun, Capitol Police Chief, has resigned in response to this. One of the things that I was talking about being frustrated about is that's the thing that's been front and center. If you juxtapose those two images of what the Capitol looked like during the BLM protests to what it looked like for this incident. And we're going to call it what it is. We'll call it an insurrection for what it is, because it was incited and then people followed through with the what those words were. How does something like that happen? Because I'm at the point now, what's got me frustrated and angry is that, one, I'm afraid to accept that they were just underprepared, because if that's the case, then that means that there's true incompetence at the head of that department to allow something like that to just be underprepared.
Right.
When I get rid of that, I get angry because there's only one other option. That means that you allowed this to happen.
And it's on video showing that.
Exactly. That you knew, you had the intel. You knew that this was a possibility. You ignored the possibility, which is something you don't do. I saw a tweet from a young lady who lives in Washington, D.C. I cannot remember her name right now, but I've been to D.C. many a times and I've attempted to get to certain points. And she made it very clear that people who don't live in D.C. take it for granted how difficult it is to even get close to that building, let alone get to the steps and get up it and get through the doors. Right. Last time I was there, I tried to take my wife and my son. We could not get within 100 yards of that building while we were there. And there weren't even any protests there. This was just a regular, right. You know, touristy kind of day. We couldn't get close. So where I'm at now is with this transition of power. And of course, we're seeing all of the resignations come. How do we repair the deficiencies that we're obviously seeing, that people are just ignoring the responsibilities of the titles and the positions that they hold to protect not only people, but our democracy?
I mean, I think like in any organization, it starts from the top down. All right. And usually the body is the reflection of the head. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have exceptions, right? But usually the body is the reflection of the head. You have to understand that except for those And I'll just call 1.3 million, whatever, the ones that decided that this country could stomach another 4 years. At the end of the day, he wasn't a respected leader. You know what I mean? So that kind of bled a whole mantra or paradigm of not respecting people in authority. And it's not that he didn't deserve it, because the office deserves the respect. But he in and of himself kept doing and saying things that contradicted the respect you were trying to give him and the respect that the office was due. Mm-hmm. So that started to become a culture of not respecting. Like, I used to have a big problem publicly throwing some of the deep jabs I threw at the president. And I say that publicly, and I say that's not the best thing to do. And I'll admit that. And I've been apologized for that because it's a bad example. But for some reason with him, I've never done that before with any other president. I've criticized presidents before. I've pointed them out for fluff, but I've never felt the need to call a president an idiot, or never felt the need to, like, even Bush. I couldn't stand Bush. I thought he was just the dullest knife in the drawer. But I never went in on Bush like I did this guy. And again, it's not his fault. That's my responsibility, accountability, right? But it does breed a culture where now we're like, yeah, okay, so everyone's calling the Trump this. Now we're going to call vice president this. Now we're going to call the Speaker of the House this. And I don't know. It just starts from the top. So that's why I do feel this transition. It's not to say that Biden's going to be the country's greatest president in history. I definitely am not going to say that. But the tone that he's going to bring hopefully will reestablish some decorum, some respect, and some orderliness, you know, to the office.
Well, you look, you know, years ago when Donald Trump first got elected, the things that he's doing now, he was doing back then. Mm-hmm. You know, he sugarcoated the words. Oh, I was just there taking a picture. You know, they were just there supporting they just there supporting, you know, one of the events that, you know, we're having. And this has went on for the last 4 years, and now it has brewed to the point that we're at the point where at any time this pot is going to boil.
Right.
You know, the things that happen, you know, the days coming up to even after the election, like, you know, record number of Americans turned out to go vote, and Biden got the majority of the votes, you know. You still had a president that was fighting and saying there was corruption that was going on. And then everywhere that you appointed justices to be at, they heard these false claims, all threw them out.
Right.
And then you had the Republican Party who enabled the same context of the conversation.
Right.
Which was, somebody was saying yesterday about Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell did the right thing. Well, Mitch McConnell should have did the right thing election night.
Right.
Which was called Joe Biden to congratulate him on the, you know, being elected the next president of the United States of America. And it was only to this right here happened to the point of, you know, there's no return like behind this right here. Like, you got foreign countries looking at us like, you guys are always poking you guys' nose in our democracy.
Right.
But what's going on with y'all? Y'all don't even respect your own democracy.
Literally. Yeah. In Europe, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was listening to one of the international broadcasts, and I love that they said America is no longer the beacon of light on a hill. And they said, and they are no longer the standard of a peaceful democracy. And I was like, man, it's not to say that we can't get there again or whatever, but I was like, this is the reality of what we're looking at right now. And the thing is, you still have people that will not accept that. They will not accept the fact that we look like third world country clowns.
And even before the joint session took place, you know, when I'm sitting there listening to their claims as of why they don't want to recognize these electoral votes, like, it was like an onslaught of Republicans just up there to fuel even more of the fire and lay more false claims to the narrative that the president had put out about, you know, there was a rigged election, you know.
Yeah. Two things. One, another funny, to bounce off of what you just said, Stone, from the international viewpoints. A Canadian made another post that said that if America saw what was happening in America based off of the elections that America was holding, America would invade America to introduce democracy to America. And that's one of those, I mean, it's funny when you hear how it's written, but it's a lot of memes that are out there like that, that joke about us being that beacon, that shining symbol of what democracy is. There's another one that says that, you know, they found oil on Mars and there's a bald eagle and that's America there. And it says, I see the oil, Mars, you need some democracy. And those kind of things, it shows the hypocrisy that we as a nation have perpetuated, because we talked about this before too, Stone, that the image that we hold of ourselves here is not the image that the international community holds of America. I've got friends Absolutely in Germany, not. France, Australia. They do not see Americans the way Americans see ourselves.
Absolutely.
And I'm with you, Councilman Mahoney, that I'm of the, and Stone calls me a cynic a lot and says I'm being too negative, but I'm not sure that where we've devolved to is a place that we can actually get back from. Now, my second point to what you were talking about with just the perpetuation of rhetoric and vitriol that the Republican Party was attempting to object prior to the insurrection incident. This is where the second part of my anger comes from, because once the incident happened and they reconvened that evening, you've been hearing about it for months that there's a divergence, there's a split in the GOP.
Right.
But then you got to see it. You saw Mitch McConnell backtrack. You saw Vice President Mike Pence backtrack. You even saw Lindsey Graham moonwalk. He threw his hands up and said, I can't take this anymore. And he stepped back.
He's like, I gotta beat him.
But in that same moment, you had Ted Cruz, who I am absolutely disgusted with. John Holly, who still got up and still spat the same, tried to sugarcoat to make it a positive. And I can't understand how you could maintain that after what you've been spewing, what you've been defending, what you've been presenting to the people that you should be representing for the last 4 years. They see that it's a farce at this point, but you're still going to lie and tell the truth at the same time. I find it difficult to see how we get back from that. Now, I'm not so much worried about the 81 million of us. I'm worried about that 74, 75 million of us who are a part of that party that split. So, Councilman Mahoney, you mentioned having to shake some trees coming up. You have to deal with this dance a lot. From the grassroots level, I think that's where it starts. But at the same time, if we don't have that example from the top of how to unite things, how do you plant those seeds at the grassroots so that we can eventually overcome what we're watching happen in real time right now?
Well, when you look at how America is actually put together, you know, with classes of people, you have the poor people, poor class, you have the middle class, and then you have rich people. And if you look at all the laws that actually are trying to be enacted, you know, historically, Democrats are always trying to help the low to medium class class of people. But then you have the Republicans who are always pro big business, pro manufacturing, pro corporate America, and they need more tax cuts. They need more breaks. Well, when do we get to the point, just like what you just said, when do we get to the point where we just want to do right by everybody and give everybody the opportunity to be successful and have that American dream that we've always talked about, what this country was founded on? But, you know, we quickly, we talk about America in one content, but then we retract when it goes to, I got to give up something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, you know, when I was talking to somebody else, we was talking about, you know, how do you get more African Americans to be millionaires? Well, that means that you got to go to the billionaires and you got to give them something. They just not finna give away nothing without getting anything. You know, you look at Silicon Valley. We don't have nobody. We don't have people up there at Silicon Valley with all the tech money is actually coming into. You know, I was sitting there. I was talking to a group of young kids the other day, and I was like, look at where your mom work at. Look where your dad work at. Look where your aunties, any relative that you want to pick. Majority of them do not work for a African-American based company Well, you have an African-American CEO. And so you have to change that. You got to identify what the barriers are, you know, because majority of all these programs, they are not made for us. You know, we just looked at the last COVID money that came out, and I was on a conference call with a representative from Donald Trump's office, and he was talking about, oh, this is going to be the great plan. Oh, you need to go ahead and get registered. The churches need to apply for it. But listen, you come meet with us 2 weeks after y'all don't gave out majority of all the money. And there was no technical assistance to help us have, you know, access to the money. So it was, so the average African-American business that is just mom and pop, just every day, just trying to make it work. You know, they had no access or technical assistance to help them access the money. And then they didn't have African-American banks in place, you know, to make sure that the loans, you know, was given out properly. So we got a lot of work to do. And I'm curious to see how they're going to do this next package that they're actually trying to give out.
Right. I think I'm of the mindset of there was a movie, and Johnny, you have a way better memory than I do. It was what's the British guy's name? He's knighted. He's a British actor. Whenever I want to bring this stuff up, I can never think of it. Anyway, Patrick, so you have Baldwin.
Sir Patrick Stewart?
He's an older guy. He is an older guy. But anyway, it was Baldwin, the oldest Baldwin brother.
Okay.
And this British actor. You always think of Sean Connery and this guy. And for some reason, I can't think of him. Anyway, in that movie, he made a statement because they were running from this bear. This bear was hunting them in the wilderness. And they had to survive. And, you know, Baldwin got hurt and he was about to give up. And this actor was telling him the story. But the moral of the story is what one man can do, another can do. And that's kind of what made Baldwin, you know, push through. And my point is, we had a Black Wall Street at one point. And the period of time when that Black Wall Street existed, the racial disparities were a lot greater than what they are now. But they did it. So instead of me worrying about, well, what are they going to do to be fair to us? How are they going to offer us equity? I think a lot of our focus should be on how did we do it back then? Because back then you couldn't just walk up into wherever the white people were. You couldn't, you know, back then. So they had all those things against them in spades. It's not that they have disappeared nowadays, but they had them against them in spades. Yet we still found a way to have this thriving community.
I always have a huge appreciation for Stone when he's able to find that silver lining and that piece of gold and all of that dirt. And you're absolutely right. They were. But what happened to Black Wall Street?
Well, I was going there. And my thing is, they became such a threat where they ended up being destroyed. But that goes back to my other point, though, is that was a different time. And just like how that was a worse time for blacks, whatever. Now at times you ain't just gonna come in my hood now and light a bomb. And
well,
and,
no, of course just, not. Okay. But I think it goes to what Councilman Mahoney was saying. He literally just laid out when that last financial package was out, what did they not have? There was no technology or infrastructure to support the distribution of these funds to the communities that needed it. Last time it was bombing. This time it's prevention. So I see it as it being, it's the same warfare. It's just different tactics.
I think we're at the very cusp of some of the right people recognizing it. And, you know, one day, hopefully one of us three will be in a position where we can be way more instrumental in it. But, you know, with Greenwood Bank, like that's just such a thin level layer of getting started. But regardless, that's where we need to get started. We need to look at people like your Oprahs, and even more so, even there I go again, black filmmaker
Tyler Perry.
Thank
that
you.
That guy.
You know what I'm saying? Where, and more so Tyler Perry, and this is me speaking from the outside in, not knowing their personal business, not being their inner circle. So I'm gonna go ahead and disclaim that. But from the outside in, it feels like and seems like the optics look like Tyler's doing a little bit more about black owning, black, you know, owning rights, black owning properties, black owning what we do and being successful at it. Oprah has been amazing. As a humanitarian, she's been amazing. And God knows the stuff she's done for the black community, African-American community. There's tons of it. So I'm not speaking against Oprah. I'm just talking about from the optics, from my humble little seat. It seems like, it feels like a more on purpose thing for Tyler. And you might not say that for those who work on him, because always they always say he's cheap, but that ain't coming from me. You know what I'm saying? But he's offering you a job and an opportunity, because there are people that are growing out of that situation and moving forward. My point in saying, how do we now multiply that? How does it become from a one Tyler, and then somehow he breeds two, and then each one of them breed two, and we have this, you know, exponential growth of black ownership? Because if you notice, Tyler had to deal with the white money, don't get me wrong, but it comes to the point where he doesn't. So once we get there, where do we go? I feel like that's the question. But it still comes back on us. We still have to have the whole, I can take care of me, not as an individual, but as a community.
Well, if you think I'm ignorant
in that. I don't know.
No. But if you go back and think about Black Wall Street, you know, you had a cluster of black communities that kept their dollars within the circle of the community.
Exactly.
It stayed there and it rotated and it just didn't go out like it does now.
Right.
So those are challenging. Those are barriers. Those are barriers that we got to try to find some resolve of. Okay, we got these. How many of these actors and these people that are financially successful taking their money, putting it in a black bank? You know.
Right.
You know, it's almost like saying, "Well, I want you to support black businesses, but you ain't got your money even in a black bank to give back to black businesses." You know.
Yep.
So there's got to be some, it has to be some buy-in, you know, and then we also have to make sure that we're putting the money in the right places, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, my district is 93% poverty, you know, and I'm trying to get people out of the housing authority, and I'm trying to show them that, hey, you guys should be transitioning. It's okay if you're using the housing authority because you're going to college. Or you trying to get a degree, or you trying to get yourself together. But when it becomes generational housing authority and right. We start to repeat the process, now time is not your friend.
Right.
You know, you're going to be able to spend 30 years in a housing authority. You could have bought a house and gave it to your kids. They won't have to, you know, worry about anywhere to stay at again. Mm-hmm. So, but then there's crutches that are put in place to guarantee that society of people stays in those type, you know, demographics. Because right now, if you're in the housing authority, if you go and it's income based, mm-hmm. if you go get a job, when they recertify your income, you're going to be evicted because you no longer meet the threshold to stay there. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, I ain't going to take the job, or because I'm going to get put out of my residence, or I'm going to take the job and 30 days, I'm going to be homeless. So we got to really start talking to, you know, HUD and, you know, these housing programs to say, hey, we want to transition people out of housing authority, but we need a 90-day cushion so we can get them somewhere else where they won't be homeless. Because I can tell you right here now, if a person has somewhere to stay, and because they're going to get a job, it's going to, you know, dislocate them, that's a deal breaker.
This is kind of evolved way beyond what I thought it would conversation.
Well, actually, I was about to tie it back to, because you said something where I was going to tie it back to what we, but go ahead.
Go ahead, because it's probably, it could very well possibly be the same thing. What was it?
Everything you're saying, the only thing that kept coming to my mind was that there is a big play, big picture. And I best equate it to, and y'all tell me if you think I'm just being conspiracy theorist or if you think whatever. I picture this puppet master, right? And I'm going to, just for craps and giggles, I'm just going to call him the quintessential global billionaire. And on his strings, you have black, white, Republican, Democrat, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it seems like we're all bickering with one another. It seems like there's problems here. But if we were all to look up, there's one puppet master using it for whatever agenda or for whatever means is necessary. Now, one puppet master represents maybe the world's 1%, whatever. Now, I'm not going into the whole Illuminati thing. I'm not going into all that. But I do believe a lot of times that, you know, because people talk about, well, Antifa, they're the ones that, it wasn't Trump supporters that did this. But I don't outright dismiss that as rhetoric. I think it's a blend of the two. But I do believe that there are those out there where it behooves them and it is to some kind of an advantage to cause disruption and to cause division and to cause chaos. And while we're all focused on this and think it's Republicans against Democrats and think it's Trump against everyone else, there's something else going on over here that we're not paying attention to. Am I just being ridiculous?
I wasn't going to use a cute little analogy like that to get back to it, but I think that's valid. I like puppets. Puppets are good. What I was going to get back to was
hey, councilman, you got to listen to little markers like that. That means that there's something missing in his childhood that he's holding on to.
Oh, no doubt.
I was kidding, but I'm damaged. That's another podcast. We can open up on another podcast.
If you want to unpack me one day, we can do that.
We can unpack with our followers and our listeners. So.
I was gonna touch back on the whole thing of how we got here as a country, and then Councilman Mahoney mm-hmm. actually talked about that dichotomy of do you do better financially and lose your home or keep your home and stay in poverty. And it comes down to an educational thing in my book. And one of the main questions I wanted to ask Councilman Mahoney was about how do we keep up engagement? Because a lot of times what I notice with people when they're in those situations, I like to have those conversations. Just ask, how did you get here? Has it always been this way? What do you want to do? What can you be doing now? And a lot of times the answer is, I don't know. Because all they know is the situation that they're in, which is it comes up to a lack of education, which is what we've been seeing in this whole political process the last 4 years is a lack of education. People can be right in your face telling you something that's absolutely not true, but because you aren't engaged enough to follow the process, you have no true understanding of what's happening. So you make these surface level decisions based off of it. And I see the same thing in our communities. We aren't engaged enough in our community to understand why it is the way it is, who those puppet masters are, and what our actual options are to get out of certain situations. So my question to Councilman Mahoney would be, one, now that we see increased engagement just because the world is what it is right now, how do we capitalize on that engagement and transfer it to self-education or communal education to where we're really starting to understand the foundations of our situation so that we can start to create those building blocks to get out of them?
You know, from what I see is, and a lot of times when I'm caught up in situations, I got to take two steps back and look at it from how everybody else is seeing it with the information that I have. So you think about a lot of African-American and minorities, they are emotional. They do things off of emotion. We march off emotion. We protest off emotion. But it only lasts for a certain period. Then we go right back to our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do we stay on task and we keep the issues at the forefront that we don't lose our grasp on what we're trying to achieve? And we got to examine different demographics in different areas, because some of the things that are barriers in rural Georgia are not necessarily barriers in Atlanta or barriers in Florida. So we got to really do our homework, you know, and where those barriers are, there's where we should be embarking change. A lot of it may be, hey, we could be successful if we had a transportation system. You know, so we need to look at transportation infrastructure. A lot of it could be, hey, I got two kids, I want to work, but I don't have a babysitter. So now we need to reach out and find out what services are out there that we can take, you know, those problems, you know, those stalemates that keeps us from being successful. But we have to educate. You know, when we talk about the American dream, what does that mean to each one of us? And how do we look at that? And is there a pathway to the American dream? You know, We are actually like, we, you know, a lot of African Americans are born into poverty. You know, there was no life insurance, or any life insurance that you did buy was just only enough to actually bury you if you didn't borrow any money from you. You know, so we have to, you know, find out how do we pass on generational wealth. You know, a lot of Black people don't even participate in the stock market, you know. And you look at Bitcoin, like Bitcoin don't hit record highs, like the, you know, I think there's like up to like 30 some thousand points.
No, it's 41,000 this morning, but that's, that's,
yeah, but
that makes, that's another one of those things that upsets me, because I, again, those are the things that I feel like, as much as I try to share the little bit of information I have, whether it's political, whether it's financial, whether it's whatever, I usually get brushed off. Like, oh, we don't want to hear about that over here. And all I'm trying to do is what we're talking about, educate and create a new level of engagement. But it seems to me that we've become so numb in what our scenarios are that we aren't even looking for a way out anymore, because I don't know if the hope, you talk about the American dream. I'm gonna be honest. I personally have never believed that the American dream is something that exists. I believe, just like America, it's a symbol of something to attract things to itself. But the concept and the idea of the American dream, I don't think it's a real thing. Alyssa Farah said this today. Was it today or yesterday? She's a former White House director of strategic communication. She just left with a lot of other people who left. And she was talking about, you know, everything that's been going on in the country. And the number one statement she kept repeating was, this is not who we are. And the thing that stood out to me was, if you have to continuously remind me that this is not who we are, this is exactly who we are.
Yeah, because you keep doing stuff to the contrary.
Yeah. And if we're in a place where we have to keep saying, is the American dream real? How do we get a piece of the American dream? Is it a real thing if we have to keep looking for it? And that's where I'm at. So, again, that's why I pose the question of how do we at some point spark an interest in wanting to stay engaged, to continuously self-educate our communities so that we do know about these things, Bitcoin and mortgage note investments and real estate investment in general, or even life insurance, whatever it is. When you say it, we as a community have heard the words, but we know very little about it. And I think it goes back to what Councilman Mahoney said, is that information is just not being disseminated to us either early enough for us to begin digesting it, so that, you know, we grow into our ways and then we just become that too difficult to teach an old dog new tricks. But I think that's where we are right now, is trying to figure out how to spark that interest in being engaged and then continuously perpetuate engagement so that we are informed.
I think I'm going to start a whole new system called capitalism.
Capital what?
Capitalism.
Capitalism.
Socialism, or capitalism with a dash of socialism?
Here's why. Because capitalism is inherently selfish.
Yes.
All right. Capitalism is about how much money can I make?
Right.
Which is really the basis of the American dream. And, you know, and even though there are other developed companies that have that practice capitalism, I stand to be corrected, but the United States is pretty much the king of capitalism. And so that's what people look at when they see, because there are opportunities and systems set up in place, albeit some better for certain hues of skin color. But regardless, there are systems and things set up for you to make tons of money for yourself. So that's capitalism. Now, what people call community, they inappropriately call socialism, because we were asking, you know, what do we do next? Like, for example, if, you know, a family has to choose between making more money and losing their home or keeping their home and struggling. Well, that's where community comes in, because everywhere from the Bible, when he was talking to the Ephesians, all the way to, if you want to talk about socialists or whatever, but that's where the community steps in. Like, you shouldn't have to make that choice for a decent life. So if you're living in the slum, which is subpar living, and you have the opportunity to make more money, whatever, but you're going to lose where you are, that's where the community steps in. Say, all right, everybody, let's all pitch in. put them in this better home so they can take advantage of this opportunity. That's community. But we call it socialism. The moment you want to help somebody where they didn't necessarily work for it or earn it, we want to slap the term socialism on it, and then we shut it down. That part has to stop. Even the very definition of community is sharing, or the feeling of sharing in common interests, goals, and objectives. That word sharing means you participate in it. And that's where we as, and this isn't just about blacks, because my whole thing is, why does it work for the Jews? Why does it work for the Indians, the East Asians? They do it. Jewish do it. Why can't we do it? That's why I keep pointing the finger back at us for our community, because we have to do certain things for us first before we can blame anybody else. Like, it's one thing for me to die of heart disease and I eat fast food every day and I don't exercise. I can't blame the doctor for failing in the operating room. But if I live a healthy lifestyle, I do everything I can to keep up my body, but then something still attacks my health, but then the doctor screwed up, I can blame the doctor all day long. But we as a black community, we still eating the fast food, we ain't exercising, we, you know, rob each other, we kill each other, shoot each other, but then we want to blame the white man with his boot on our neck. So, well, his boot may be on our neck, but we also have our hand on his boot. That's the part we have to get out of. And I'm very big on that. And that's, you know, the work involved in that is way more than me speaking about it on some podcasts. But capitalism, that's the key.
Capital. Well, we a lot of times look at what other ethnicities are doing and we say it's okay. You look at the Japanese. Mm-hmm. Japanese don't put no matter how much money that we shop with them, they don't put no money back in our community. Mm-hmm. The Indians buy up all the convenience stores and the liquor stores and lottery places in our community, and they thwart those efforts and they push that rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even the Hispanics, you know, they have their own grocery store, they have their own convenience store, they keep everything in their network. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones take all our resources and take it somewhere else. You know, and we'll come up with 1,001 reasons to not shop with you, and you'll be the main one who they come and ask for help to bury their loved one, to pay their light bill, or a loan for some gas money to get to work this week so they can get back home. And none of these other ethnicities and demographics of people, they do it.
Right.
So we got to start taking care of, you know, we got to start taking care of business. And we no longer can keep saying it's okay to spend our black dollars with people who are not going to put money back in our community.
Right. Period. Like, literally, period.
And then when you start evaluating from store to store, okay, listen, we're going to put our money together and start our own store. You know, it's a hard time. I was telling a couple of friends of mine, I was like, listen, how about 10 of us put up $10,000, $100,000, and what we're going to do, we're going to look at investing, we're going to look at buying back the block, we're going to look at the activity that's going to bring black wealth back into the black community. Mm-hmm. I said, but two things that we're going to do from day one. We're going to have to hire a lawyer, and we're going to hire an accountant. Well, they said, why we got to hire a lawyer? Mm-hmm. Well, our lawyer's going to keep us out of jail. That's what the lawyer's going to be for. And the accountant is going to be there, so you ain't got to worry about Maceo taking a dime from you. When you want to know how much money we got, you call the accountant. Man. I own 10% of the company, just like you own 10%. Because there's a big problem with African-Americans, men especially, trusting each other.
Right.
You know, these women, they'll bond together, and they'll have coffee and donuts and chop up business and do business together, and probably 9 out of 10 of them never have any problems. But us black men, we're very territorial. You know, we're always thinking that somebody's trying to take some from us, and we get away from the task at hand. So we got to start, you know, find these little small success stories and build off of it. You know, it doesn't take a lot of money. It's how you use that money and access to information. You know, you got to start looking at Bitcoin, and you got to start looking at investments. I was thinking the other day, and man, it was my defining moment. This was back in, I want to say 2002. I was in a car wreck, I was in a car wreck. Drunk driver hit me head on. I got probably $35,000-$40,000 from the accident. I'll never forget this, guys. I was in my room looking at MS. At that time, I don't think it was MSN. I think it was AOL back then. But I was looking at the internet and was looking at Google. And something said, this is the stock. You need to invest in it. But because I was investing immature, I leaned to my own understanding, which was what I was always taught, what I was always given. So I went and bought the nice big TV. I went and bought the nice car. I went and partied and did what I had. I did that, man, I'd be multi-millionaire right now.
Wouldn't be on the call with us.
But it goes back to what you said. We got to start creating those societies. Well, yeah. Each one teach one. You know what I'm saying?
Right back to Johnny with the education.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it was the talented 10th. You know, and one of the things I think that we really got to start pushing is that we got to have some type of African-American studies in our school system. We can't just let our kids keep learning about a society of people, how they oppressed us, how they always being successful, and we wonder why. You know, I don't know how loose we can be on this podcast, but how we get what we call now women bees and we call the other guys ends, and we just operating all out of character, you know, because we don't know where we came from. We don't know the fight that was put up for us to get to have an opportunity to go vote, to be able to flip a state called Georgia that was part of the Southerners that looked at African-American minorities as property. And now look where we're sending the first black African-American senator to Washington, D.C.
Yep.
One, big shout out to a few of the big names that were responsible for some of that. We all know Stacey Abrams, obviously. Helen mm-hmm. Butler was one. Rebecca DeHart is one I can think of. Deborah Scott is another one I can think of. A bunch of other names of people, organizations that had a lot to do with that Get Out the Vote. The one thing that they did over the last decade was going into all of these small communities, these grassroots communities, and did exactly what we're talking about these other things, and educated people on the responsibility and the importance of what their vote means. Because you send someone who's there to represent you, then you can ask for these types of things in your community. So now obviously the job is not done, but the last decade I think we can say was a success with the election of Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff turning Georgia blue. At this point, I think it goes to, one, holding the two of them accountable to our communities here in Georgia, one. But then, two, they're still on a national level. So like Stone said, it's going to be a lot of our responsibility. How do we scale what they did over the last decade, getting out the vote and educating people about that process? Is there something that's in existence now, Councilman Mahoney, out where you are, where there's a small collective of people that are doing the same thing with, let's say, educating people about finance? Like, are there little finance after school programs? Is there an African-American studies group that's not a part of the actual, you know, public educational curriculum, but somewhere kids can go after school to actually study their personal history? Like, do we have communal pockets that are already existing? And once we discover these, how do we connect those pockets to create a network of educational systems that we can send people to? Because I think what I've discovered in having this conversation, we're on the same page that we know what's necessary, whether it comes to voting, whether it comes to understanding what we need as a community, what we should be doing financially. I think we're on the same page that we just don't know. But that doesn't mean that there aren't pockets of people that are there. So from a political standpoint, do we approach our politicians for funding to push these types of programs, or do we have to just lean on the people that have them to try to expand them on their own? What's the next step?
I think that you have to do both. I think that you have to challenge your elected officials, because see, your elected officials know where those resources are at. They can go in rooms that you can't go into. They can advocate on the platform that, you know, if it came from you, it would just only be a phone call coming in and you get an answer machine. But we have to, just like we create this push with turning Georgia blue and getting out the vote, we got to come back now and say, okay, we got the body, but now we need to dissect it. Mm-hmm. You know, you eat an elephant. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yep.
But now we have to go back and say, hey, we got to start creating this same push about black wealth, about educating African-Americans on budgets, educating African-Americans on business. And then we got to hold our elected officials accountable. A lot of these communities that, you know, have poverty qualify for a lot of grants. You know, our city gets a lot of, my community gets a lot of community development block grant money because it's poverty. You know, it comes, they in an area where the city once, when it was created, they focused more on downtown and another section of town. So the federal government came up with a program that says, okay, because you guys left these guys off the radar with infrastructure, we're going to allow federal monies to come back into these communities, but only can be used in these areas over here. And then you have revolving loan fund grants as well, where you can have nonprofit agencies that can create revolving loan fund grants that are grants that was given to you from the state that you actually only can give to minorities based people, and it goes towards small businesses. So it's how we create that atmosphere of how do we want to roll this program out. You know, it starts with an idea. And a lot of people we ain't going to be able to grasp, you know, they just too far gone. They just think the way they think. You ain't going to say anything to be able to change them. They think having $100,000 in the bank is money, but they paying taxes on it every year. And you wonder why you're losing money every year. So we got to, and we got to start doing it young. I'm talking about as young as when kids start to count.
Right. So, On that point, continue, but I wanted to nail on your point. There's a phrase I use on that, and it is everybody dies. And my point is those that are locked in that mindset, I had the whole thing of good starting young. I said, because those people are going to die off, but who's going to take their place when they're done? That's who I want to focus on. But go ahead. Sorry, I just wanted to.
So we have to start, you know, grassroots efforts, you know, to address, you know, if we don't want people growing up and being in debt and not understanding credit, or being in businesses and not understanding business credit, then we got to start creating these type of societies where we give them that information and we identify those barriers that keep us from being successful. Because there's things that are in place that, you know, just like you said, the puppet that's controlling everything, you know, why do, you know, we only see a year down the road, you know, why we can't start to see 5 years from now? And it goes back to the American dream, which is, and I respect, you know, Jay from Jonathan, what he was saying, you know, but, you know, if there's no American dream, then what are we telling our kids?
Right.
What do our kids got to live for? If we can't really roll out a dream, that's a vision, that's something that you can touch, and we got a pathway for you to be successful. And that's why I say, you know, and I was saying this earlier, you know, we have got an invitation to the dance,
mm-hmm.
you know, but now since we're in the ballroom, are you going to change partners? Mm. So we got to hold, huh. you know.
Oh, that'll preach.
Yeah. You know, we got to hold these people accountable, and it's sad and it's scary because in 2 years, guess what? In 1 year, Warnock will be getting ready to start his election again, and he got to have something to stand on, and he got to have something to actually to advocate to the people, to make them go back to the polls with that same energy to vote for him again. Remember, we are very emotional. You tell us that we ain't gonna be able to get this $15 unemployment. I'm gonna say $15.
The per hour, the minimum wage raise?
Minimum wage, yeah.
Trust me, I'm there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and if these $2,000 checks don't come out real quick, they're going to start to shut down then. Because you told us something that we ain't got, it took you 8 months to get us the $2,000 that we supposed to have been got. I ain't going back down there. It don't work. They're going to do what they want to do anyway, you know? So we really got, like I'm talking about, and I hope Ossoff and Reverend Warnock are having these conversations with, you know, their chief of staff, and as they be able to start to curtail, you know, their candidacy that these things that you went to all these communities and campaigned on, people are holding you accountable and they are looking to see you come back and do something that you said you was going to do. We understand that you're not perfect, but you can't say you got the House and the Senate and you can't get nothing done.
Well, we already have an example of that happening. We've had all three before and very little got done, but we cannot let that happen a second time, I think.
It literally is put up or shut up time right now.
Yeah, because we're coming off of the heels of 4 years of promises made, promises kept, if you wanted to say whatever. I say not so many of them kept. Yeah, I put it in quotes because there are some people who believe my guy kept all of his promises. Okay.
But if there are some things he did, but through executive orders.
Exactly. Temporary. Exactly. Yeah. I think if we go through two terms of back-to-back, and I'm going to call it regimes because I don't know if we can...
We're not going to put our feather in the hat yet.
Yeah, exactly. Right, if we have opposing regimes that go a consecutive 8 years of making promises with very little delivered, I think what we saw this week, this past week, was the cracks in the armor. Ooh. And I think that will completely dismantle what's left of the Democratic Republic because nobody will believe in this. You've got 74 million people now not believing in, you know, the rightful elections or fair and free elections. And the other 81 million are not believing in the promises that were made and kept. If the new promises also are not kept, then you'll have both sides not believing in the promises. And then the free and fair election thing won't even matter because what am I going to elect you for when both sides have proven you're not going to get anything done? So I think we are. I think we're at a major crossroads right now with not only our image internationally, but Joe Biden said, "I want to bring back the soul of America." I would suggest we don't know what that is. That's black. What they're talking about.
We are the soul.
There you go.
And is Joe Biden that Barack Obama that was elected after George Bush that inherited, you know, the economic fiasco that he had to deal with, the housing market going in, the stock market crashing, all these different elements that was going on? Is Joe Biden that president that will be able to pull that off? Because he's going to have to reach across the lines and get, you know, some Republican support. You know, it's okay to control the House and control the Senate, but, you know, is they going to get rid of the filibuster? You know, because that's going to, you know, that'll put a hold on things and keep things from being on the floor to get a vote.
A great poet had something real amazing to say on what you just said, Councilman Mahoney. And I'm going to shout out that great poet. He said, "I got high hopes for you and we going to see." Big shout out to Drake for saying that, because I think that's where we are right now. We know what needs to happen, but we're in a holding pattern. We got to wait and see if they're going to be able to do all of that stuff. It's one thing to have the power, but can you exercise it?
If anyone has the tools to do it, again, it would and should be Biden, because he was on the team and saw it right. He was at the right hand when Obama had to navigate all that mess. So he sat there and watched it be done. He saw the mistakes made. He saw what worked. So he has all that. Now, then he also has the House and the Senate, you know, bar the filibuster. Yeah. So you almost didn't get two. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're almost in about as good a position as you can be in to make significant lasting changes. And if you can't, I'm with Johnny. I don't know what year 3.5 is going to look like, where civil unrest or whatever you want to call it is concerned. I might need to go in and grab that spot down in Australia.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, we let it get so bad that, listen, we still got to deal with the Breonna Taylor.
Right.
We still got to deal with the George Floyd.
Right.
We still got to deal with the Ahmaud Arbery. Mm-hmm. And so on and so on and so on and so on. And these things are not going to go away.
No.
Like, he's going to have some real reform. That's going to be something that's going to be able to sell and appeal to the people, where it says, finally, we're able to move forward and get past this.
Right.
Yep. It's a lot of mess. You know, And listen, let's just be honest. Trump didn't want to give us no $2,000.
No, he knew it would get crushed in the Senate. It was optics. And I think anybody who, again, stays engaged with politics, you start to recognize the dance when they're doing it. And that's all that was. He was pandering to his base because his base believed him. Oh, our president wants this. And what that was a power struggle between those two factions of the GOP that I was talking about. You now saw Trump and McConnell vying for power of that party. And I believe that's all that was. And we see how that turned out. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't think that was ever really an intention because he knew it would get struck.
Right.
Councilman Mahoney, we want to say thank you so much for spending your time with us. I want you to kind of give some closing thoughts or remarks on, in your opinion, both given the pandemic, this election fiasco and stuff, in your opinion, what's next or what should be next?
I think that, you know, elected officials all across Georgia have to really engage, you know, your lawmakers. You got to engage your congressmen. You got to engage your senators. And we got to identify what those challenges are in our community. And we have, you know, and the coronavirus is not helping, you know. Record number unemployment is not helping. Reform, police reform is not helping. So we got to start having a real conversation, you know. If we want to get real change, we got to start having real conversation. Don't just come to me when you want to vote, you know. I want to be at the table, you know, since we was out there knocking on doors together, when we was out there campaigning together and we was out there celebrating this election, let's continue that same energy and let's continue that same fight that we started with from the beginning, knowing that this was just the beginning, you know. So we have to make sure that we stay engaged with the powers that be, because, you know, a lot of times we look at these elections on the presidential and the Senate level, but the most important elections are the local elections. Those are the ones that directly affect you, like today, right, you know. And if you're putting the wrong people in office that doesn't has, you know, I was at a meeting with a couple guys from the NAACP, and I'm not going to call no name. And somebody asked, what is our pathway to success? And representative out of representative out of representative, they said, well, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know what we need to do. I know we just can't continue to do this. Then the next guy, well, I don't know. You know, so much has happened. You know, we just gonna have to pray, you know. And when it got to, when it got to me, and I was like, something wrong. If we are elected by the people to be the vision of tomorrow, and we don't have a pathway to success.
Right.
Like, I was always taught, when you get accolades behind your name, you got to do something. So if there's a problem in your community or there's a problem in your city, your elected officials should be standing up night after night after night on the phone, calling, trying to get, you know, turn over every rock that they can to bring real change to their community. And now, since we got a president that's Democratic, we got two senators that flip Georgia blue, the nation is watching what we're going to do. And then we got to reach across state lines and help other communities come up with a winning blueprint, like Stacey Abrams and Helen Butler and others have done here in Georgia.
Right. Well, thank you so much, man. Jonathan, anything you want to state or close out with?
I talked too much enough today already. I'm going to shut up for a change. Nah, I'm honored that Council Mahoney would come on and I don't want to say validate kind of what I've been thinking about a lot of these different processes, but I feel like it's a good starting point to try to start internalizing the responsibility that each one of us has to do what Stone preaches all the time and start to focus and take care of us on the communal level, on the educational level, on the investment level, financially, and in the political world. I mean, it's our responsibility to do it, so let's get to it.
We might just need to change the name of the podcast, call it the Accountability Podcast. Because we can never seem to escape that word.
It's always there. Yeah, but
just for you guys even embarking and really want to have a conversation on the issues shows a lot that you guys really care, that you guys want to have meaningful conversation for meaningful change. And these things are at your guys' heart. So, you know, you know, I salute you guys for even just want to have the conversation, because a lot of people don't want to have the conversation because they don't want to hear, you know, what the solution is, because that means you got to sign up for something.
Right.
You know, right. you know, the mayor of Brunswick, you know, Amar Aubrey was killed at. You know, I stay in contact with him, and, you know, he's always asking me, well, Chairman, you're going to come down to the proceeding? Are you going to come down? The news going to be? I said, no, I'm not coming down for that, because I'm not about that. What I'm about is talking about the change that need to happen in your city and how we need to come together and make it happen. Because right. when the cameras are not there anymore, these people are going to go. Yep. And what they done, they left. You know, you look at the unemployment rate down there now, it's record high. You know, the housing is issues down there. You know, employment is issues. But those are the type of issues that I like to sign up for, because I'm in it because my heart is in it and I just care about people. And you guys having this podcast today, just want to have the conversation, shows that, you know, you guys have the people's heart in mind also. So thank you.
No, we appreciate you. I mean, it's good to have somebody doing their job because they believe in what they're doing. And seems like that's becoming a rare breed, because there are going to be times when you don't feel like doing your job. So the fact that it's a heart issue for you, that gets you up out of the bed at morning and keeps you up late at night. So we appreciate everything that you're doing, Councilman. Hopefully we can have more people like you. If you guys have stayed on here to the end, first of all, congratulations. But just want to remind you again to make sure you hit that subscribe button, that like button. Come back and listen to this, because we did cover a lot. Councilman, do you have any social media presence where people can follow you or stay in touch with you and see what you're doing?
Yeah. You can reach me on Facebook, Maceo Mahoney. I kind of own the Twitter, the Instagram, you know, and I need to start doing it. I need to embark on my platform, but I just be so busy and just focusing. Like, every day is something new, you know. Just think about the many cities around the state of Georgia that, you know, it can be a lot of weight on your shoulders when you're trying to partner and help each other and learn from each other. And then you have incidents like what happened on the 6th, you know, it's.
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram definitely takes a back burner to a lot of that a lot of times. I can vouch for that too. So,
well, since they won't see you on there, all right, so we have Maceo Mahoney on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And then since you're not on there anyway, Johnny, go and tell them where they cannot find you.
Just Johnny Vaughn, JustJonyVaughn, all over the place.
Y'all know how it is for me, man. On Instagram, I'm all over it. So I'm Instagram, I'm Stone letter O7. On Twitter, I'm Stone 007. Granted, though, I'm not on Facebook much anymore, because I don't really like Facebook anymore. But the most productive, I'm going to close it with this. The most productive room in my house is the bathroom. Everyone go out there, be productive, and have an amazing week. We want to thanks again to our guest, Councilman Maceo Mahoney. Y'all go out there, love each other, be better. Peace.